We're holding on to Zion Amud Aleph, the second line. We started yesterday, the Mishnah had talked about a distinction, following up from, we had a few Mishnahs ago, the idea about a woman of the Shavuya, where when we believe that she remained Tahar and when not. We mentioned it in connection with our Pesha also our Pesha Hitzer, that if we only know that she's a Shavuya based on her own word and she herself says I'm Tahar, that's good, but otherwise not. So that brought us to our Mishnah, which made a further distinction between you have a Shavuya, which is a woman who was taken captive just by a raiding army or whatever, versus our Mishnah had talked about a difference of a woman who was actually arrested and jailed by Goyim, where we said, if it was Ayudei Momon, if it was over financial matters, then she's mutter to her husband, because then we figure that the Goyim are going to be afraid to touch her because they're afraid they're going to lose their money if they assault her. Mashenkin, if it was Ayudei Nefashis, if she's under a death sentence, then we said she's also to her husband, and we said there's a machloikus for showing him what that means. Does it just mean that she's also to her husband if he's a Kayin, because she might have been raped, and a woman who's raped is also to a Kayin, but mutter to anybody else? Or does it mean Rashi had said that even it would mean she's even also to her husband even if he's Yisrael because of the concern that she might have voluntarily submitted to them because in hopes of getting better treatment or whatever, or because as it is they're treating her Hefker and yeah. So we said the Gemara had made a distinction that even Ayudei Momon there's a difference between whether Goyim or Jews have the upper hand in that society. If Jews have the upper hand, meaning if Goyim know they have to respect the rights of Jews, then yes, Ayudei Momon, the woman, can be mutter because they're afraid to touch her. Mashenkin, if the Goyim have the upper hand, then even then they're not afraid to touch her. And we mentioned that there was a Mishnah in Adius that mentions a case where a girl was Hurhana, where she was taken as a mashkin, somebody had borrowed money. A family owed money to Goyim or whatever, and they had to give away their daughter as collateral for the loan, basically. And then in the end, they defaulted on the loan, and under Goyish law, she now belongs to them. She's effectively their slave woman or whatever. And we said that in that case, because they were Edim, then therefore we can say that she's still Tahar, which implies that you only need Edim if she was Hurana, if it was just Nechmasha, if she had just been arrested Stam. Even though in this scenario over here, the Goyim have the upper hand, we would say she's mutter. And the answer we said, with the first answer we said, the Gemara had said, is no, you know, it so happened in that particular case it was Hurhana. But yes, the same din might apply in the case of Nechmasha, where she was arrested also, if Yada Goyim Takifa. That's where we're holding. Second line of Chazayin Amud Aleph. Ikadamri, there's another version of this discussion, Amar Rava. In the first version, what we said was Rava used the Mishnah in Adius as a question to contradict what Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak had said in the name of Rav about the distinction between Yad Yisrael Tekifa or Yad Evdei Kochavim Tekifa. In this version, Rava uses that Mishnah in Adius as a proof. Afanan Nami Tanena, indeed, we can see this distinction because we learn in that Mishnah, Hey, Rav Yossi HaKoyen, Rav Yitzchai Ben Akatsa, Vabas Yisrael Shahuran of Ashkelon. This Bas Yisrael was taken as collateral in Ashkelon. V'rechakua Ben Emishvachta, later on when she came back, her family was keeping away from her because they figured she'd become Tomei. Where there were Edim saying that she had not been secluded with any of the Goyim at any time, and that she had not been Nitma. If you're going to believe that she had been given as collateral, then you have to believe the Edim that she wasn't secluded and she wasn't Tamei. And if you don't believe that she wasn't secluded and that she didn't become Tamei, then you have no basis to believe that she was Hurhana, that she was given as collateral either. You might. The point is, you mentioned yesterday. I mean, they themselves gave her as collateral. But the point is, the family members who are being merachik, who are claiming that she may have become tamei, are not necessarily the same ones who gave her over as the mashkin. So as far as they're concerned, she might have just been nechbashal. Yes, they know that she was. They know that she was being held by goyim. But as far as they're concerned, it might have just been that she was arrested, as opposed to hurana, where she was actually given in a way that she become their property according to goyish law. Anyway, what's the point? Now, in that case, in Ashkelon, it was a matter of money, because that's what Hurana is. The time of the Edim Edenois, and why are we saying that she's mutter? Because there were Edim on her. Ha ein Edim Edenois, which implies if there's no Edim, then she would have taken Ben Aser. My love, now wouldn't we assume, unlike in the first version where we said that we assume that, that the Mishnah says Hurhana as opposed to Nefesha, as opposed to just arrested, here in the second version we're assuming that it's the same thing. My love, Loishna Hurhana Veloishna Nefesha, wouldn't we assume that maybe that's the same thing, whether Hurhana or whether she was actually given as collateral or just arrested? And then that would prove Rav's point that why would she have been also without Edim? Only because it's a case of Yadi of Chavon Takifa, because in Ashkelon the Goyim have the upper hand. And again, therefore you do need Edim. Therefore you do need.
They have the upper
hand. If the Goyim have the upper hand, then even Ayidei Mamun, even if the arrest was only for matters of money, you would still need Edim to say that she was never Nitma. Otherwise, in the second version, yeah.
So why?
Because we're assuming even though that Mishnah talks about a case of Hurhana, it so happens that was the case, but not necessarily does it mean only that this din would only apply in that case. Maybe it applies in any case of Nechbasha, any case where a woman is arrested.
That she assumed to have been.
That we assume that there's a possibility that the goyim have abused her, because since Yad Evkachavim Tekefa, since the goyim have the upper hand in this society, they're not afraid. They can do whatever they want, and they know they'll get away with it.
Right.
So why is she mutter? Only because of Edim.
Right.
Yeah. The answer is loy. Where are we? My love loishna hurhana loishna nechbasha. Isn't it the same, presumably, whether hurhana, whether she was given as collateral or nechbasha, just arrested? And the answer is loy. Hurhana shiny. No. The Mishnah is actually specifically saying hurhana as opposed to any other case. Yes, in the case of hurhana, because in goyish law she now belongs to them, then they would have more reason to figure that they can do whatever they want with her. That they can do, as opposed to, not in other words, in the first version we said we were trying to use this Mishnah as a stira to Rav, and we said not necessarily you could understand the Mishnah as being as saying Hurhana, but not necessarily that it could also be Nefesha. Here it's the other way around. We wanted to use it as a proof for Rav. You can't use it as a proof for him either. So you could say the other way around also, that there is in fact a difference between Hurhana and Nefesha. Maybe in the case of Nechbasha, maybe indeed there wouldn't be a difference whether the Goyim or the Jews have the upper hand. You would always assume, when do they feel free to do whatever they want with her? Only if it's Hurhana, only if under Goyish law she actually belongs to them as a maid, as a slave woman. Whereas not Nechbasha, not the case where they just arrested her and even under their laws she's not their property. So you don't have so in the first version it wasn't a contradiction to Rav, and in the second version it's not a proof to him. And a third version of the discussion, Ikka de Rami la Mirma. There's others who taught this thing as what Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak said in the name of Rav was actually given as the answer, as a way to reconcile these two Mishnayos. The first two versions that we had over here is Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak had said in the name of Rav, he had just explained our Mishnah. That our Mishnah, within our Mishnah, the difference between Mammon and Nefashis, within that there's a difference whether Yad Yisrael Tzkifa or Yad Evdekav Tzkifa, with Chavzayin and Morales, without reference to the Mishnah in Adias. This third version is that to begin with, the Chachamim realized, the Amoraim realized, that there seems to be a contradiction between these two Mishnayos, and how do we answer it? With this statement of Rav. So Ikka Deromi La Mirma, Tanan, we learn in our Mishnah, Ide Mammon Materis Levaila, that if this woman was put in jail for over matters of money, then she remains mutter to her husband, or a minu, but we have a contradiction. Hey, Rabbi Yosef Kolo, this story from Ashkelon, where we see only because we were Edim is she mutter. Whereas our Mishnah is saying that even if you don't have Edim, she's still mutter, if it's a matter of money. But Ashkelon Ide Mammon, now that case of Ashkelon was a matter of money, because any time of the Edim made in Nisa, and what are we saying, that she's mutter only because there are Edim giving Edus, that she remained to her, her Edim made in Nisa lie. So according to this third version, the Chachamim, the Amoraim, pointed out we have a contradiction between these two Mishnayos. Do you need Edim, or is it good enough that it was Ali Edim Mammon and you don't need Edim?
In the second version versus the third.
Well, the first two versions was that Rav had said his statement only in reference to our Mishnah. When Rav said his statement about the difference between Yad Ovdekachavim Tekefa or Yad Yisrael Tekefa, he wasn't even considering the Mishnah in Adias. Later on, we pointed out, is that Mishnah in Adias a steer to him, or is it a proof to him? Here, according to this third version, Rav himself is saying his din in order to reconcile these two Mishnayos. for Mishani. And therefore the answer was, Amar Shmuel Bar Yitzchok Lekasha, Kan Shayad Yisrael Tekifa Alev Tekachavim, our Mishnah is talking about when the Jews have the upper hand over the Goyim, so therefore again in the case of Mammon, the Goyim are afraid to touch her, to abuse her, because they know then that they know then that the Jews have rights in this country, and therefore they're going to end up losing their money. Whereas the Mishnah in Adius is talking about a case where the Goyim have the upper hand, Al Atzman, again we said with a euphemism that we don't want to say that they have power over us, and therefore without Adim you can't declare her Mutter. Now then our Mishnah,
the last version, it seems to be the most definitive one.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't know necessarily that makes a difference to halacha. The Gemara is just presenting the different ways in which they learned this din of Rav and this whole discussion in the various yeshivas. Whether it makes a difference as far as halacha, I don't think so, but I don't know. Then the Mishnah said, "Ijay nefashas asura v'chula." That if it's a matter of nefasha, if the woman was under a death sentence, then she's asur. Amar Rav. Now, so the question is, are we talking about that the woman is under a death sentence, or maybe we're talking about something else? We could be talking about that her husband is under a death sentence. And therefore, the Goyim figure, well, now then her husband is going to be sentenced to death, therefore we're free to do with her whatever we want. So, Amar Rav Kagan Noshi Ganvi. So Rav says, for example, the wives of Ganovim. So Rashi explains that the Ganov is being sentenced to hang, therefore, by the Goyim, yeah, by the under Goyish law, the Ganav is being sentenced to hang. So therefore, it's customary in many different places. Therefore, that the government declares his wife and his property free for the taking. But then therefore, so this woman, therefore, we have to be concerned that the Goyim may have abused her. Yeah. Having said that, though, Hagoyis Habach has a different version for going Hani Noshi de Ganvi, that we're talking about women who are thieves. So according to Hagoyis Habach's version, then she's not the wife of a Ganav. She herself is under a death sentence. Is being sentenced to death for stealing. That's the kind of case we're talking about. No, Hani Noshi de Ganav. No, you're right. It's the other way around. Sorry. Noshi Ganvi, the version that we have over here. Noshi Ganvi means women who steal. The version that Rashi has and that Hagoyis Habach has, Noshi de Ganvi, women who steal. Yeah. Okay.
And Noshi Ganvi?
Noshi Ganvi would mean women who steal. Noshi de Ganvi would mean women of thieves.
Of thieves.
Right. Of thieves, yeah. Right. Wives of thieves. The lady, Amakugan Ishte Shaben Dunai. Lady says that's not enough. If her husband or she herself is a Ganav, that's not enough. Yes, maybe the husband or she is being sentenced to death. That's not enough for the Goyim to consider them a free for all. No, we're talking about that, for example, that her husband is Ben Dunai, who was a well known Ritzeach, a well known murderer in those days. He's mentioned at the end of Soita that once in his time they had to be mevatel the whole concept of Egla Rufa. Because you couldn't say anymore when you find a body, what's the whole idea? When you find a body and you don't know who killed him, then you have the whole ceremony of Egla Rufa. Once Ben Dunai came along, then already murders became more prevalent, and you couldn't really say that nobody knew what happened.
That's when Jewish people was prevalent on the land?
Yeah, we're talking about it towards the end of the Second Beit Hamikdash at some point, but yeah. So such a person where he's a wanted murderer, one of America's most wanted criminals, then they'd treat his wife as free for all, but not just necessarily because somebody steals money. Another machlok is amachizki, but who should nigma din in lahariga? This whole din only applies if the person has actually been sentenced, if the sentence has already been passed. Then at that point, we say, according to either of these two versions, that at that point, the Goyim consider the wife free-for-all. But Rabbi Yochanan, I'm officially enigma, did in Lahadriga, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, even if the sentence has not been passed yet, but already the judgment is going on, the case is being tried, already then we have to be, there's reason to be concerned that the Goyim may have violated her. Continuing on this topic of women who were taken captive, the Mishnah says, a city that was conquered by a kaukoim. Rashi says the kaukoim means a siege. So an army was besieging a city and then they conquered it. Kol koyanis shenimtzu b'seich ha'psulis, or koyanis, meaning wives of koyanim who are found in the city are posel to their husbands. Again, because of the concern that the goyim raped them. The im yesh
la.
But we'll talk about in the Gemara the different. We'll talk about in the Gemara the different kinds. There's different kinds of invading. There's different kinds of invading armies. We'll get to it. But the normal situation we're talking about is why would a city be overrun by soldiers? Is where it was besieged. The im yesh la edim. But if a woman has edim that she was never alone with the goyim, afila eved afila shif. So even if the aid is a slave or a slave woman, harei la neman, and then we believe him. But a person can't be believed about themselves. As we said a couple of Mishnayos ago, that if we know that she was a Shavuya, then we can't trust her, we can't believe her Eidos about herself. And we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that it also applies between husband and wife, that the husband can't give Eidos for his wife.
Seems we need two Eidim.
You don't need two Eidim, you need one Eid is enough. But we're going to say in the Gemara, Shavuya Hekivu. But you have to have somebody other than her. We'll get to it in the Gemara what we mean exactly. The Gemara says it will meet you. You're telling me, you're telling me that if a Goyish army conquers a city, then you have this concern that they may have gone and raped all the women in there. We have a contradiction. A Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, talking about the dinim of Yain Nesach, says Balshes Shenichnas Shabala here. If you have an army, Balshes Rashi says literally comes from a word that means search out, because when an army comes into a city, they start searching and looking around for contraband or for anything. So when they come into a city, b'shas shalom, if it's in time of peace, chavis psuchas asuris, then any open barrels of wine are also, because they may have opened them or already found them open or whatever and drank from them and then touched them and made them yayin nesach. Stumos mutaris, where any barrels that are sealed are mutar, because evidently the goyim didn't touch them. B'shas milchama elav elam mutaris, whereas if it's at a time of war, then all kinds of barrels of wine are mutar. Lefisha ein p'nai l'nasach, because they don't have any free time to go and do nisuch, to go and pour out wine in honor of their avodah zarah, because they're too busy with the war. So there we're saying that there's no concern that they're taking time to drink the wine and make it yayin nesach, whereas our Mishnah is saying we assume that they're taking the time to go and rape all the women. Amar Rav Mari, very simple. Livo yesh pnai, l'nasach ein pnai. Yeah, they can make the time for livo. They have a powerful yetzahara for arayas. L'nasach ein pnai. They don't have such a yetzahara to do yayin nesach. They're not so frum that they have to first thing go and pour out wine in honor of their idols. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Elaza Mishmei Dechizki Amar. There's a different difference. Kan b'kaukum shal oisa malchus, kan b'kaukum shal malchus acheres. There's a difference between an army of the same kingdom or of a different kingdom. Now, what do we mean by the same kingdom and a different kingdom? So Rashi says the same kingdom means basically as follows. It means that this country, let's say, this city, let's say, I mean, you know, you take, for example, current geopolitics. You have a city in Ukraine, for example, which Russia is invading because they want to annex it to their territory. They want to annex it. They don't want to destroy the city. They want to conquer it. They want to annex it to their territory and rule over it. So therefore, they're not going to destroy the whole city. As opposed to kan b'kaukum shemalchus acheres, according to Rashi, is talking about, for example, that they're going and fighting against some city far away from their territory where they're not intending to annex it. They're trying to destroy it because they're fighting against the other kingdom and they want to destroy their city in order to weaken them, in order to destroy one of their bases. So therefore, the idea would be that if it's the same malchus, if they're trying to annex this territory, then we assume that they're not trying to destroy the city, so therefore they're not necessarily going to go and pour out the wine and rape the women. Whereas opposed to if it's shalmalchus achera, then they might, because they're just destroying everything anyway. So therefore they figure everything is a free for all. This is all according to Rashi. Let's learn the next few lines, and then we'll talk about Tosfos has a completely different understanding of this. The question is, shall oisa malchus nami? Even if it's an army from the same kingdom, meaning even if they're trying to annex the territory, how do you know? I mean, okay, they're not coming to destroy the city. How do you know out of that whole army, one person didn't leave his post and go run into the city and go start raping women? Why aren't you afraid of that? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you're talking about Shemishmaris Royas Zuasu. Yes, but you're talking about that this is a well-disciplined army. You have the different guard posts; each one sees the other. Nobody can easily desert his post and go run into the city and start pillaging and whatever without his fellow soldiers seeing him and then court-martialing him. So therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Okay, the question is, and inevitably, at some point, the guards are gonna fall asleep, and then somebody will grab his opportunity. We're talking about a case where you have around the city, you have all kinds of different alarm systems. Shushilta, you have chains. So if anybody walks where he's not supposed to, and then they'll make the chains will rattle, and then the other soldiers will hear him. The kalba, and you have dogs which will bark. The gavza, and you have sticks that people can trip over easily. The avza, and you have duck. Avza is geese. That also they honk or whatever over there when somebody disturbs them. So with all that kind of thing, if any soldier leaves his post and tries to get into the city and then make any mischief, the other soldiers will know about it. This is actually a machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and the Rabbanan. Chad Omer kan bekalkum shalois amachus kan bekalkum shamachus. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He's the grandson, yeah. So the machloikas on this topic. Chad Omer kan bekalkum shalois amachus kan bekalkum shamachus acheres. One said that the distinction between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Avodah Zorah about Yain Nesach is the difference between the same kingdom and a different kingdom, meaning, again, is it trying to annex the territory or not? And he didn't have any problem with that. He said that you're not, given that it's not a hefker situation, when it's kaukum shalais and malchus, this question that we just asked, won't it be inevitable that one soldier is going to desert his post and try and start looting? The one of them, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, or the Rabbanan, we don't know which one, figured that's not a big deal. You know, yeah, it's a possibility, but it's a far-fetched possibility. The other one indeed figured that this is a problem. Don't you have this possibility that one of them leaves his post? Or Mashani, and he gave this answer that we just said, that you have all these different alarms and trip wires and whatnot, so nobody's going to be able to leave their post that easily. Yeah.
In the context of Purim, then, when Ahasuerus sent his armies throughout the month, would it be considered month of
Shavuot? Well, that was peacetime. That's different. What are you talking about? So that would be Vishas Mohammed. But in that case, I mean, they're trying to kill all the Jews. But Pashtus, they would consider them heftier. But yeah. Anyway, Tosfos has a completely different explanation of this whole thing. Among other things, Tosfos points out the problem. Usually, we try to say we're makel in the case of Ashuria. Why would we all of a sudden think? What if one lone soldier went and started rampaging through the city? That's not the way to think of these things. So first of all, Tosfos says it's the other way around. This distinction that we're making between Oysa Malchus and Malchus Acheres is actually the other way around. Oysa Malchus means that they're in the territory of their own kingdom. Now, the Meiri actually says that Oysa Malchus can mean, for example, there's one particular rebellious city in the kingdom, and they're going to put down the rebellion. So what is it? Because they're on their own turf, they feel very much more confident. Therefore, yeah, sure, we have time to be menasech, to be boil, etc. We're not worried that another army is after us because we're on our home turf.
Oysa Malchus doesn't mean if their own territory was invaded by another.
So according to Rashi, it said kaukum shel Oysa Malchus means that you have, for example, Russia invading the Ukraine and trying to annex the city. According to Tosfos' explanation, it comes out that it means it's all within the same country. So they have there's one particular city, for example, that rebelled, and they're trying to make an example of it. But since they're in their home turf and they're not afraid that any other army other than the people of the city itself are going to oppose them, therefore they feel confident, and therefore they feel sure we have time to go and do Yain Nesech and to do Be'ilah and so forth. Whereas Malchus Acheres is the case where we're saying they're in a rush. At any moment, the army of the country that they invaded might attack. So therefore, they don't make any time for Yain Nesach or for Be'ila. That's first of all. Second of all, then Tosfos says, we don't mean like Rashi said that what if one of the soldiers deserted his post and started rampaging. We mean the other way around. Why are we saying, even if it's Oysa Malchus, even if the soldiers here feel completely confident, we can do whatever we want, there's nobody here opposing us. Out of all the women in the city, it's not possible that one woman ran away and got away from them. Just like we're going to say soon, the Gemara is going to mention soon that if there's a hiding place, then women can be mutter on that basis because they could have hidden there. Why don't we say the same thing? Even if the city was invaded, not invaded, whatever, even if the city has been taken over by the army because the city rebelled or what have you, every woman is just going to be a sitting duck over there. Some of them are going to be able to run away. And the answer is because you have all those booby traps around the city, therefore none of them is going to be able to get away that easily. That we'll get to in a minute. The hiding place, whether it has room for one woman, we'll get to that.
No, what you said is that we're going to look for a way to be Michael on the woman on the basis that she got away.
Right. But we're saying
only
if
one woman.
But we're saying once there's room for it to be mapped to one woman, there's room.
Could be that one.
Yeah. We'll get to that soon. We'll get to that soon in the next few lines of the Gemara. But anyway, the answer is once you have all these booby traps around the city, then yeah, they're not going to be able to get away that easily. Tosfos does point out, by the way, that you could, and for Rashi, you could say that these two answers that we said, we made a distinction between liberal and nasich, and second of all, we made a distinction between oisa malchus and malchus acheres. Rashi might learn that the second answer is not contradicting the first answer; it agrees. When it comes to yain nesach, there's a difference between be'ila and yain nesach. The goyim are never whether it's the same country, whether it's a different country, whether it's invading nearby territory or faraway territory or whatever, they're not going to bother with yain nesach. That's why the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah says that the wine that any barrels of wine remain mutter. As far as livo, that's where we make the distinction between oisa malchus and malchus acheres. Whereas according to Tosfos' explanation, the two answers one sort of contradicts the other. It's either you're saying that if they don't have time livo either, and if they do, they do. And when would that distinction be? Oisa malchus or malchus acheres. If you have in the city one hiding place, and then it saves all these kohenes. We have now a basis to assume that any kohen, that any kohenes, any wife of a kohen in the city got away and hid in that bunker. What if the bunker, what if this hiding place only can hold one person?
No, we're
not talking about that. There is actually a discussion when we say over here that it's Matzelas, does each woman actually have to claim that I hid in that bunker or not, or is it even just because it exists, therefore we consider that's good enough? That's a machlokas we're showing. But anyway. So the first assumption was we're talking about there's one hiding place. We don't know the size of it. And we said, therefore, it saves everybody. Because even, okay, it may not be enough to hold everybody, but at least it's able to hold more than one person already. There's enough of a basis, therefore, to say that everybody should be mutter. But what if it actually only holds one person? Do we say then that each woman could be the one who hid in that one and was saved? Or maybe we don't say that. Because after all, you're going to have, if there's room for only one woman there, that means the vast majority of the women were exposed. So. Gemara asks that. But what's the question? Why do you think this is any different than another case of Safik Tumah and Tara? You have a case of two paths. We learned about this from Safim. You have two paths, Echad Tomei ve'Echad Tahor. One path is known to be Tomei because you have Kvarim stretching across the whole width of it. So inevitably you walk on that path, you're going to pass over the Kvarim and become Tomei. The other path is Tahor. V'holach be'echad man v'alta Tahor. A person walked on one of these paths. He's not sure which one. And then he was involved with Tahor. He touched Shroma or Kodshim or what have you. Which Tosfos points out, by the way, the reason why we have to mention that detail. If he hadn't made Tahor, we would tell him, you know what, you have a suffix, go to the mikvah. What does it hurt you? Once he got involved with Tahor already, then you have a real question. Are the Tahor Tomei or not? That's why we have to deal with the suffix. Then his friend went on the other path and then also went and touched Taurus and got involved with Taurus. So now you have a suffix, which one was Tomei and which one's Taurus or Tomei. Rabbi Yehuda, if each one comes to Beis Din, to the Rav separately and asks about himself, then we say each of them are Tahor. Because when the first person comes, we can tell him you're Tahor. Rashi says it's a suffix Tumah b'Rishus HaRabim, and the rule is that the suffix of such a thing is Tahor.
They weren't together.
Right. So the first person comes to Beis Din, he asks, they tell him, okay, you know, it's a suffix b'Rishus HaRabim, you can be Tahor. When the second person comes, it's not necessarily such a contradictory thing to tell him you're also Tahor, because both of them are the suffix.
When they were together, it goes on the
Tartis goes on the Tartis, right. They themselves, yeah, should go to the mikveh afterwards. It won't hurt for them to get sprinkled with paradigm water and go to the mikveh. But at least the Tartis will assume it to her. Shneim ka'achas tmeis, whereas if both of them come to Basin and ask at the same time, we're going to have to say they're tummy because you can't very well tell them both that you are tar. One of them obviously is tummy. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a ben kach ben kach tmei. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says either way they're tummy. Ve'omar Rava v'item Rabbi Yechanan. So now Rava, or some say Rabbi Yechanan, said that it's a little more complicated than that. Ve'bas achas divrei hakol tmei. And if they both came together to Beis Din, then everybody agrees that they're both tummy. Even Rabbi Yehuda. That's what we said. He said,
one second.
If they come one after the other, then even Rabbi Yossi agrees that they're tahor. The question is, what happens if Reuven comes to Beis Din and he says, Shimon and I walked on these two paths. We're not sure which one walked on which path. What's my status and what's his status? So Rabbi Yossi says that's similar to Basachas. So you're asking about two people together. The Beis Din can't say both of them are tahor necessarily. Therefore, they have to say that both of them are tameh.
Well, one of them is tameh.
Well, we don't know which one though. Well, my medamel of Basachas. Whereas Rabbi Huda would say that it's similar to Basachas, similar to one to one after the other, because the fact is you don't have the two of them standing there together. Tosfos says, by the way, that Bevaldi Shol Olava Chaveroi doesn't mean actually that he asks what's the status of me and what's the status of my friend Shimon. It means Reuven himself comes to Beis Din and says, what's my status? And they tell him Tahar. Later on, he comes back and he says, you know, I should have asked also, what about Shimon? That's what we mean, Bevaldi Shol Olava Chaveroi. The difference is because if he asks immediately about the two of them together, of course it's Vazakha. It doesn't mean that he had to come back actually. Tosfos expression bali shashal al asmi b'tiaru, that he asked about himself and they said he's tahor. And then he comes and asks about his friend. So kivin shashal. So Tosfos says since he asked about both of them b'maimad echad, he asked about both of them in the same standing over there in the same session. Therefore, you should consider it vasachas, according to Rabbi Yossi. Whereas Rabbi Huda would say, once they told him already you're tahor, then that's already considered. That's already considered vasachas. Anyway, what's the vort? How does that relate to here? V'hachanami kivin d'shori lo l'kulu k'vasachas dami. Over here, if you're going to say that all the women are tahor, then it would be considered like vasachas. So what? So Rashi points out, therefore, that means we should say the halachas like Rabbi Yossi. We said vasachas, they're tamei. So how could we assume that we'd have to assume that all of them are tamei? Tosfos says that actually no, we're not necessarily. We could even be talking according to Rabbi Yehuda. We don't have you may only have one person coming and asking the shaila, but he's asking about all of them together. We know that there were many koyneis over there, so even Rabbi Yehuda might agree that that's considered vasachas. Anyway, so what's the question? Why is Rabbi Yirmiyah asking if there's only a place for one woman? But do we assume that all of them are tahor because any one of them might have been that woman? We see from this case over here that vasachas no.
Both cases are different.
On the face of it, it sounds the same, but the answer is no, it's not. Hochi hashta, how could you compare? Hasam vaja ikatruma, in the case of the two paths, you know that one of them is tummy. Hochami yemadi tami, here, after all, the whole thing is a suffix. Who says any of them became tummy? So yes, to a certain extent, we do consider, we have the whole din of shvuya that we say that to a certain extent, we consider it a vadai, that we consider it a vadai, and therefore, if we don't have edim or what have you, then we consider her also to her husband. But at least, the reason is, because we learned previously in the first parak, the goyim are promiscuous, and you have to assume the other things being equal, that they're going to do whatever they want with the women. But on the other hand, the fact of the matter is, you don't know for sure that any of them became Tommy. So therefore, yes, the fact that you have one hiding place is good enough. But therefore we can be made on it. So all of them would be Muslim. Boy Rabashi, what about a case, Omer lo nach beisi v'lo nit meisi mahu? What if a woman comes to Beis Din and she says, I didn't hide in that hiding place, but I also didn't become Tomei?
But we don't believe the person who didn't
become
himself,
he says. Shapesh also, Mi amrinan mali v'shater, do we say that, why does she have to lie? Meaning she has a migui, she could have said, I hid there. So like this, if she said, I didn't hide, but I also didn't become Tomei, maybe we should believe her. Or maybe we don't say that.
Why shouldn't we say that?
What? Why shouldn't we say it? Because... Why shouldn't we accept that malu v'shaker? Because we're gonna discuss now in the Gemara that it might be considered a malu v'shaker b'mkoyim edim. Effectively, we are eders that if a woman doesn't hide out, there's a very high chance that she was raped. So therefore, maybe if she said on herself, I didn't hide, maybe we can't accept this malu v'shaker. But there's also an idea. Actually, some of the Rishonim point out that when we talk about actually they talk about more in the case of a sfek sfeika, but it has to be sofik hamishapich. It has to be that the sofik you could go either way. In other words, you could have maybe A happen, and if not, maybe item A happen, and if item A happened, maybe item B did or didn't happen. And it would have to be mishapich that you could also go the other way around. That you could also flip it around. That maybe item B happened, and even if it did, maybe item A didn't happen. Here you don't have that. Basically, if she says, what's she saying? Lo nach beisi v'lo nif meisi. I didn't hide and I didn't become tamei. So we can't flip it around. We can't say, but if she became tamei, maybe she hid. If she hid, she wouldn't have become tamei. So it's not a svek sveka, a mishapich. So the Gemara asks, well, what's the difference? Why would you think it's any different than the following scenario? A certain person rented out a donkey to his friend, and he tells him, when you're going on your trip with this donkey, don't go by the Nahar Pekoid road, the Ikamaya, because there's water over there and the donkey might drown. Go instead on the Neresh road where there's no water. You know, like when you rent a car, sometimes they have rules. You know, you can't take the car into such and such areas. But Ozal Iro Ba'orcha de Nahar Pekud, so he went on the Nahar Pekud road, Umis Chamra, and the donkey died. Seems like an open and shut case, but Ozal Kameh de Rava, that came to Rava, Omale, and the renter argues, in Ba'orcha de Nahar Pekud Azli, yes, it's true, I went on the Nahar Pekud road, Miul, I have a Maya, but this time there wasn't any water there. So then it's not my fault. Normally, if there was water there, of course, I'd be chayim, I'm a pesheya. But in this case, there was no water there. It was mesa machmas malacha. It just died in the normal course of work. I should be potter. And Omar Rava, and Rava says, or on the side here, it says, actually, it should be Rava, mali l'shaka. You could argue, again, you could say mali l'shaka. Why does he need to lie? Iboy amalei ba'orchad ha-neresh azli. He could just as well have said, I went on the Neresh road. No, mali l'shaker b'makom edim l'yam rinin. You don't say mali l'shaker when there are edim against it. In this case, we have edim. What's the edim? It's not that there are edim that he went on the Nahar Pekoid road. We have the fact that we know that the Nahar Pekoid road always has water on it, or not always. He's claiming that there's maybe 1% of the time that it doesn't. But the fact that 99% of the time it does, effectively, it's as if we're edim that road is always flooded.
Always people to see what's going on, in other words?
No, not necessarily. That's the thing. If there were people who actually saw, that would be different. We're talking about there was nobody there. He took it on the Nahar Pekoid road. He's claiming that it's dry. So Abaya is telling him the fact that we know that road is usually flooded, the vast majority of the time is flooded, effectively we are edim that's always the case. And you can't say Mali the Shaker against edim. So returning to our case over here, same idea then. Again, if the woman didn't hide out, there's a very high likelihood that she was raped. So what are you asking? If Mali l'shaker, obviously in the same way as in that case, the guy doesn't have a Mali l'shaker that he could have claimed I went on the Neresh road, the same way over here. She doesn't have the Mali l'shaker that she could have said I did. The fact is she's saying I didn't hide. And once she said I didn't hide, then that's it. Nothing to talk about.
What's the odds?
The odds, yeah.
Are they aiding?
Yeah, basically, yeah. The answer is, and again, the answer is Hachi Hashta. Again, how do you think to compare the two? Hasam Vada Ika Edim to Ika Maya. In that case, there's definitely Edim that there's water, because the vast majority of the time there's water. Hacha Vada Itami, over here, is it certain that she was Nitzvah? No, Chashashahu. After all, the whole thing is only a Chashash. where it's only a chash, where we can't necessarily say that we're Edom, anam sadi, that any woman who didn't hide out has been raped. There's, we said we have the chazaka that the goyim are promiscuous, we have against that, we have the chazaka that a Jewish woman is going to try as hard as possible to avoid zinus. She'll be menavel herself, she'll make herself look as unattractive as possible to avoid it. So therefore, back to a suffix, it's not necessarily that anybody who didn't hide out has been violated, and therefore that's good enough for us.
It's not really a
vada. It's a question. Is it certain that she was nitma? No, it's not. It's not certain, and therefore we have reason to be makel. And the Mishnah continued, "Im yesh edim afilu eved v'afilu shivcha neman." And we said, if there were edim that she was safe, then even if the ed is an eved or a shivcha, then we believe him. What does that mean? The Gemara says, "Afilu shivcha didam mehemna." So you're telling me that means even the woman's own maidservant is believed? Or a minu? I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah talks over there about a case like this. We learned the Sefti Yevamos. We learned all the different scenarios where a woman winds up having to do chalitza or yibum with her yavam. Many times, a couple will realize in advance that this is going to happen. The husband realizes, you know, we're old already. We haven't had children. Yeah, I'm going to die childless. You're going to wind up in that situation. The yavam may not be so easy to deal with. Let's head off the whole thing. I'll divorce you, and then you won't be noful yibum. They don't want to divorce now, obviously. They still want to stay married. What he does is he gives her a get, and he tells her, Rashi says, he was a shchivra, he's already on his deathbed, so he gives her a get that he says, this get should take effect shortly before I die. It can't take effect when he dies, because ain't get lachamisa, but it'll take effect shortly, about a minute before, an hour before, whatever I die. Now, the din is, though, that once he gave her that get, they're never allowed to be alone together. So Rashi over here says the reason is because if they're alone together, they might have relations. Rashi says over here that the reason is, the problem with that would make it a get yashan. The Gemara discusses in Gittin, we talked about it briefly in Yevamos, that the get yashan means basically, so what's going to happen? This get bears the date, let's say, in Tishrei, because that's when he gave it to her. When does it take effect in Tevis, when the guy dies? Meanwhile, between Tishrei and Tevis, if they're alone, they may have relations. She'll become pregnant. She'll have a child, and people are gonna think that there's something the matter with this child, with a pogrom, that he was born after the couple divorced, and then they continued having relations after they were divorced. That's called a get yashan, and therefore Rashi says that's the reason why we say that's no good, why they can't be alone. Tosfos over here brings from the Gemara over there, and actually Rashi himself gives the same explanation in Gittin, that the problem is something different. The problem is, if we allow them to be alone together and they end up having relations, those relations could constitute a new kedushin. That's mevatel the get.
Therefore, what will happen?
And therefore the get is batel.
And then
she'll end up using it, yeah. And then she'll end up using it, and then she'll think that she's father from Yibum when really she's Chayev, yeah. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Lo tisiachad ima el al pi edim. She can only be alone with him if there are edim. Va'afilo al pi eved va'al pi shivcha. Even if the aid in question is an eved or a shivcha, chutz mishivchasa, except for her own shivcha, her own personal maidservant, but may she live a gas mishivchasa, because she feels comfortable around her shivcha. Rashi says, "Utashamish b'fanel." She won't have a problem having relations in the presence of the shivcha. Maybe not literally in her presence, but at least that her shivcha will know that they're doing it for it. Yeah. So in that Mishnah, then it seems that the shivcha will, that what are we saying? The shivcha may see that her mistress is having relations with her supposed to be ex-husband and won't say anything about it. Here in our Mishnah, we seem to be implying that her shivcha is believed that she can say that her mistress didn't have relations. Why? It seems from that case over there that even if she did, the maidservant will just keep quiet. So the papi says, this is different, in our case it's a shvuya, and we said already before that by a shvuya we're makel as much as possible. Rapapa says a different answer. The difference is, we're talking about, our Mishnah is talking about a shivcha that belongs to her husband. The Mishnah in Gittin is talking about her own shivcha.
Dida
means hers, dida means his. So his shivcha is not so close to her, and therefore we believe her as an aid. Whereas her own shivcha, we don't, neither in the Mishnah in Gittin nor in our Mishnah. question is, v'shivcha d'idala mehemna? Why, you're telling me you don't believe her shivcha? Hakatani ain't on a maid al atzmai. But our Mishnah had said that a person can't give eders on themselves, ha-shivcha d'idala mehemna, which implies that even her shivcha would be believed. But that's not herself.
It implies what?
It implies that even her shivcha would be believed. Her shivcha is not herself. The answer is, that's the answer. Shivcha sanami ka'asma dami. Her shivcha is considered like an extension of herself. According to the Papa's answer. Rav Ashi, I'm a hava hava shivcha didar. Rav Ashi says a third answer. Both Mishnayas are talking about her shivcha. What are we saying? V'shivcha mechzi chazi v'shaska. What's going to happen if the woman has relations, in the case in Gittin with her ex-husband, and an R Mishnah with one of the goyim? What's the shivcha going to do? Her shivcha will keep quiet. So what's the difference? The difference is, what does her keeping quiet accomplish? Hasam d'shtikasa matirasa. In that case, if the shivcha keeps quiet and doesn't tell Beis Din that they actually had relations, then it leaves her mistress mutter, meaning in other words that the get is still in effect, and then she's potter from yibum. Hacha the shikasa isauta. Whereas here it's the other way around. If the shivcha keeps quiet, that's going to answer her mistress.
If she doesn't come to Beis Din and say that
I was with my mistress the whole time and nobody ever raped her, then she's going to be also, because we know that she was a shvoya. Therefore mehemna. Therefore, if she speaks up, then we can believe her. If she speaks up,
if she doesn't, we don't.
Well, because that's what we're saying, yeah. But as opposed to in the case in Gittin, it would be the other way around. In the case in Gittin, we would assume that this woman is mutter unless her maidservant speaks up and says, yes, she had relations.
See,
it's just the opposite. Right.
Since she's changing from the nature of her being quiet,
then that's the difference.
Therefore, it sounds right.
Right. Question is, Hashtanami Asyo Mashakra. In that case, why aren't we concerned if we're saying this maidservant loves her mistress or is afraid of her? Hashtanami Asyo Mashakra. So why aren't we concerned that she'll come and lie to Beis Din? Her mistress really was raped, but she's going to come to Beis Din and say she wasn't in order to save her. Or in the other way around, in the case of Gittin. The answer is Tautilai Abda. We don't suspect that this maidservant is going to do two wrong things. Number one, to not tell us that something was done. And number two, to lie and say that it wasn't done. She's not going to go that far. She might be quiet. She might avoid saying anything, but she's not going to actually avoid saying anything. And she's not going to try to suppress the fact that bia was done and claim that it wasn't. And we have a similar case. Kiha de Mori Bar Yisak. Like we have the case, it's also in Bava Matzida, of Mori Bar Yisak. Others say that his name was Chana Bar Yisak. Also, Le'acham Bechazah, a brother of his came from Bechazah. Bechazah is nowadays it's called Khuzestan. It's an area in Iran. It's where all of Iran's oil wells are. What happened? So Rashi over here says that Mori Bar Yisak's father had Mori was the older brother. While his father Isaac was still living in Bavel, he had a younger boy. Later on, Isaac went with this younger boy to Beit Chazoi to look at the oil wells or whatever. They lived there for many years. The father passed away. The brother comes back and wants a share of the nechatim. In Bava Metzia, Rashi says it was actually the other way around. That the whole family had moved to Beit Chazoi. Mori later on, when he got older, left Beit Chazoi and returned to Bavel. The father and the brother and the rest of the family stayed back in Beit Chazoi. Later on, the father passed away, and now the brother is coming to Babel. Either way, also like Acham Beit Chazoi, so this brother comes from Beit Chazoi, Amalei Ploigli B'nichsid Abba, and he says, give me a share of our father's property. Amalei Lo Yadayna Lach, somebody said, who are you? I don't know who you are. I don't recognize you. Also the Kameh de Rav Chista, so they came, the case was brought to Rav Chista, Amalei Shafir Kamalach, you know, he has a good point. Hitaka may not recognize you. Dichti, Bayaka Yosef is Echa Behem Lo Yikiru. The Pasuk says, Yosef recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. Malamed Shiyatab Lechassim HaZaken, why is that? This teaches us, because Yosef left, he didn't have a beard yet, he was only 17 when they sold him. Or Baba Chassim HaZaken, and now he came back, he had a beard, so they didn't recognize him. So the same thing, yes, the last time Murray saw you, you were a little kid.
He was shaved, the Torah says.
No. Because by Yigalach? No, that means he shaved. That means he shaved his head.
Yes.
His head. Yeah. But uh, so so uh, So the same thing. The last time Mori saw you, you were a little kid. You didn't have a beard yet. Now you come as a fully grown man. Yeah, of course he doesn't recognize you. They say that, on this line, by the way, Muhammad Shalat of Elchismas Zaka, and I have to tell a Gleich Vertel on it. They tell a story about a guy from the town of Slonim who left in the early, even the 1800s or 1900s, whatever it was. He left his town and went to America to seek his fortune, as many other Jews did in those days. While he was in America, he gave up parts of Yiddishkeit, as many people did, including that he started shaving his beard. He finds he's not making it in America. He decides, you know what, I may as well go back to my hometown. Comes back, and he goes to the Rav, Rav Eisel Chorif, a very, very well-known and sharp-witted Rav, the Rav of Slonim, and he asks him, you know what, I'm looking around for something to do for Parnassah, I'm not sure, should I become a Melamed? And Rav Eisel tells him, you see from this Gemara that actually you'd be a backwards Melamed. Melamed, Shiyata B'loi Chasimah Zaken, Uvav Chasimah Zaken. A Melamed goes out not having a beard and he comes back with one. You're the other way around. You left with a beard and you're coming back without one. You'd be a backwards Melamed. Who wants to learn from a backwards Melamed? Amalei. So Rav Chista says to this brother, to this claimant, Zil Aisi Sadi Tahuat. Okay, go bring Aiden that you're his brother. Amalei, the man says, Isli Sadi, I do have Aiden. Umistapinu mine, but they're afraid of him, of Mori. Gavra Alma, who he's a powerful guy. They're afraid to cross him. Amalei Lididei, so Rav Chista says to Mori, in that case, Zil Aisinu Atalav Achuchu. In that case, you go bring Edus that he's not your brother. Either the same Edim who recognize him, or other. It actually says the same Edim. It could be Tosfos says it might be other Edim, but whatever it is, it's up to you to bring Edim that he's not your brother. Amalei, so Mori says, what din hachi? How is that the din? Hamotzim echaver olavanaya. He wants to take away stuff from me. He has to bring the proof. Amalei, and Rav Chista tells him, hachi din in alachu lachula almi chavrach. Yes, this is how we're going to judge for you and for all the tough guys who are friends of yours. Meaning people like you who edim are afraid to testify against them. Then yes, we're going to put the burden of evidence on you. And Tosfos points out that what we have to be talking about over here, we're not stopping talking about that the brother is saying, listen, my brother is rich, so he must be tough. Otherwise, no rich guy could ever win a case in Beis Din. We're talking about that actually these Edim themselves that this brother brought are saying, we don't want to say the Edus. Well, why wouldn't they want to? They're afraid. Obviously, that means they're afraid.
Yeah. So we know their names, so we tell him, you go and say,
you go and get
them,
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. So then the question is, and this is how this is relevant to our Gemara, the Hashtanami also Mashakri, aren't we afraid then that these Edim are going to come and lie? If they're so afraid of Mori, if they're so afraid of the tough guy, the rich guy, the Gevir Mori, aren't we afraid that they're going to come and lie? And again, the answer is Tauti Lai Abdi. We're not afraid that they're going to do two Averis. That's the connection to our Gemara. Just like we're saying that the Shivcha, according to Rav Ashi's explanation, is not going to, first of all, suppress what was done wrong, and second of all, lie about it and say that the opposite. Same thing over here. They might suppress their Edus and be afraid to say that he's the brother, but they're not going to go so far as to lie and say he's not the brother. The Gemara says, Lema Ketanoi, should we say this whole machloikas about whether the woman's shifcha is believed to testify about her, is it actually a machloikas tanoi? A braisa says, Zu Edus, as far as this Edus of a shvuya, it can be ish v'isha, tinek v'tinekas, it can be a man, a woman, a young boy, a young girl, avia v'ima, it can even be her father or mother, v'achir v'achosa, or it can be her brother or sister, avaloi v'no v'ita, it cannot be her son or daughter, loy avda v'shivchasa, it can't be her eved or her shivcha. That's one braisa, so we see from this first braisa that her shivcha is possible. V'tanya idach, but a different braisa says, hakol ne'amonin lahoyit chutz mehemeno obayla. A second braisa says that everybody is believed to testify that she remained tahor except for herself and her husband. So according to the second braisa, her shivcha is good. So is this a machlokes tanoim then? The answer is, did a papi or did a ashi tanoihi? If we take Rav Papi's or Rav Ashi's answers, where they found ways in which the shivcha herself is, in which her own shivcha is believed, Rav Papi because b'shvuyeh hekilu, and Rav Ashi because it depends on what the shivcha's silence accomplishes, then yes, you have to say they're only agreeing with the second braisa, because according to the first braisa, the shivcha is disqualified no matter what. Did a papa milema tanoihi? According to Rav Papa's answer, where Rav Papa had said that actually her shivcha is not believed, do we have to say that he has to be going according to the second braisa, or can we find a way the first braisa, or can we even say that Papa would say, I can agree with the second braisa? The answer is, Amalach HaPapa, Ki Tanya Ahiba Mesicha Lefi Tuma. You know what that second braisa is talking about when it says that even her Shifcha is believed, would be talking about where she's Mesicha Lefi Tuma. Whereas we discussed yesterday that she's not saying it as Eidos. Yes, if she was saying it as Eidos, we would say, like the first braisa, that her Shifcha is considered like herself. And we said in the second braisa says herself and her husband are apostles, so therefore the Shifcha would also be. But if the Shifcha is Mesicha Lefi Tuma, then it's good. Mm-hmm. That she's just telling it over the story to her friends or whatever. And we have an example, Ki ha d'chi asir of Dimi, as we have the case when Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bava, he told the story, Omer Rav Chanan Kautigna, Omer Rav Chanan Kautigna Mishtoi, Rav Chanan Kautigna, Kautigna is from Carthage in North Africa, used to tell a story, Maisa Balafnei Rav Yishro ben Levi, V'hamrilo Rav Yishro ben Levi Mishtoi. One version is that the story happened, the case was brought to Rav Yishro ben Levi, the second version is Rav Yishro ben Levi himself told the story. Maisa Balafanei, the case came to me. So either the case came to Rabbi Shor ben Levi, or Rabbi Shor ben Levi is telling us that the case came to Rebbe in previous generations. Anyway, the Adam Echad Shem Mesiach Avitumai, a certain man was once Mesiach Avitumai. He's just telling over a story to his friends. But Omar, Ani ve'iminish binu lebeinu avi kachavim. My mother and I were taken captive by the goyim. Yotzasi lishev mayim daiti alimi. Even when I went out of the house that they were keeping us in to draw water, I still had my mind on my mother. Like I'm still looking out towards the house. Lakat eitz and daiti alimi. I went out to get firewood, and I still had my mind on her. I'm still looking after her. The Yisir Rebbe l'kohen al piv, and Rebbe allowed this woman to marry a kohen based on what her son said. Now, if it had been, according to the first braisa, we said that the son is possible to give edus, so if it had been real edus, that wouldn't have helped. But because it was Mesiach HaPitumah, he's just telling it, stam as a story to his friends or whatever, so therefore that's good enough evidence that to be mocked to his mother. Same thing then with the Shifcha. We could say, according to the Papa, that the Shifcha is normally not, her Shifcha is normally not allowed to give edus on her, but if it's Mesiach HaPitumah, then yes, we'll accept it. How about a goy? I mean, in the case of being matu and aguna, we accept Mesiach HaPitumah from a goy. We learned at the end of Yeramas. We have a case where there's the pundikis, the woman innkeeper who was Mesiach HaPitumah, that their friend had died. Yeah. In this case, I don't know. We don't say over here.
Because a shifcha is okay, why not a goy?
Because a shifcha at least is chayev b'miktas mitzvahs. You know, she at least has. So it could be that Mesiach HaPitumah, even it could be in this case, even if it's goyim, it would be, I don't know. I have to look it up, I guess. Yeah.